it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast,
a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I reached out to the governor's office here in the state of Oregon. Spokesperson for the governor told me yesterday that Oregon and Oregon State were still working with the Pac-12 conference and Oregon, working with the Oregon Health Authority to try to come up with some protocol that would clear the way for the Pac-12 teams in our state to participate in practices. Still waiting for that to happen. I think ultimately, if you are somebody who is looking at the state of California, you are even more confused because Governor Gavin Newsom has issued some statements today that are a little bit puzzling. And John Wilner of the Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News, is here to break it down. Wilner. Let's talk about Governor Gavin Newsom in California. What do you make of today?
Well, it's certainly, I could see why it would add to folks' confusion when there's been a lot of reporting, some of it certainly by me, that state regulations are preventing the California schools from playing. And there goes Newsom saying there's nothing in the state guidelines that is preventing the schools from playing, and that's been a misrepresentation of facts. And he was pretty adamant about that. So it's real interesting. But the bottom line is the state guidelines prohibit cohorts of more than 12 players. So you can't have a 22-man game if you can only have 12 on the field at once. So I don't, you know, he's playing politics. He's trying to dodge the heat. But his own rules clearly say you cannot gather in groups larger than 12. And I don't know how you play football in a group larger than 12. The good news is he indicated some willingness to work with the Pac-12 on that cohort number. And if they can just get to 22, right? You can have in practice, you could have offense versus defense. You could hold a game. They just need to be able to get from 12 to 22. You would think they'd be able to do it. But who knows? It's California.
John Wilner with us, Bay Area News Group, at Wilner Hotline on Twitter. Let's back up and look at the Big Ten Conference. Were you surprised at what they did today?
No, I wasn't. I mean, it seemed like it had been heading this way for a while, right? And they have been under intense pressure, obviously. They, like the Pac-12, are getting in their possession the antigen test, which will allow them to test players on the day of the game. That's the key for everybody, really. So the Big Ten's got all this pressure. They've got the antigen test coming to their department soon. And they don't have any state restrictions to worry about. So they are freed of this blanket that is over the Pac-12, the Oregon and California schools. So they can get up and get moving much quicker. They don't have to deal with getting sign-off from their states.
I'm here. You know, the Oregon governor's office yesterday told me that Oregon and Oregon State are still working with the Oregon Health Authority to come up with guidelines or protocols that would make them comfortable in sort of lifting that restriction. It felt to me a little bit like they were going, hey, what's the rush? The Pac-12 doesn't even want to play right now. That has changed. I feel like the Pac-12 has to play now. They can't sit out as an outlier in December and January and play these scrimmage games. Do you agree with that?
I think playing in January would be that is worse than not playing. If you don't play at all, you take heat right now for the next 2 months during the standard football season. If you don't play now and you play in the winter, then you're taking heat for not playing now, and then you're out there reminding everybody on a weekly basis in January and February that you didn't play. You're reiterating the fact that you're different. I think they'd much better rather be out of sight, out of mind in January and February than a weekly reminder that they couldn't do what everybody else did.
The 49ers, Rams, and Chargers in California got an exception to Newsom's, cohorts of 12 rule, or the rule of 12, whatever you want to call it, the guidelines. How hard is it in that state to do that? Is that just a wave of a magic wand, or do they have to produce protocol, or what's your understanding there?
I have no idea, because I've been trying to get answers from the governor's office, and it has not quite worked. What I believe there are two things at play. One is that they have different guidelines for professional athletes compared to college athletes. And, you know, Newsom was a college athlete. He played baseball at Santa Clara. So he certainly probably feels it for the student athletes here. But so there's two different sets of rules, and I think the reason that there's two different sets of rules is that the NFL can test their guys every day, and that's what they're doing. You know, they're using the PCR tests. They've got this concierge service, so they can get their results basically within 24 hours, and they've got unlimited money, so they're testing their guys every day. The Pac-12 is going to get to that point with these antigen tests, and the question is going to be, will those antigen tests be enough to let Newsom lift the restrictions that are currently on the college teams?
John Wilner with us, Bay Area News Group. You know, there are still some unknowns, of course. We don't know long-term effects. Is anybody pumping the brakes internally at the Pac-12, vocally saying we shouldn't play at this point?
I'm not aware of that at all. In fact, my sense is that the medical folks feel fairly good about the situation once they get the daily tests, right? I mean, nobody knows. Like you said, nobody knows about the long-term implications. But what they do know is that the players are safer, right? It's not like if you're going to not play football, then you're not going to get the virus, right? There's a better chance that you are going to get the virus if you're not with your team for, 6 hours a day, because you're going to be out in the community where it's more prevalent. So the more time that the players can spend with their team getting tested every day, that is a safer environment for them than anything else other than sheltering in place at home.
Wilner, the idea that 8 games in 8 weeks feels awfully ambitious, leaves you no wiggle room or very little. If you are the Pac-12 conference and you want to line this up with the Big 10, and let's just say they've lined it up so they can participate in the playoff, how many weeks do you play? Is it possible that they play 6-game schedule? Do they play a 5-game schedule? And, does it North Division versus North Division, South Division versus South, and then you have a conference title game and try to get into the playoff? What do you do if you're advising the Pac-12 here?
Well, I don't think – I think that the playoff is gone for them. I just don't think that, given what they're looking at in terms of when they can start, it is hard to imagine that their champion is going to have enough games played to be a viable playoff contender, right? I think that if everything broke absolutely perfectly, you're talking about a Halloween start. And I just don't think that's going to leave them with enough games, right? They're going to be matched up against – Big 12, ACC, SEC, Big 10 competitors that will have played more games and created more data points for the playoff committee. So I think that's kind of gone. Their best bet to me is to try to play in the November 7th or November 14th, play 5 or 6 games, crown a champion, send that champion to, you know, the Fiesta or Cotton, because the Rose Bowl is a playoff game this year. Have a place for your champion. Play your championship the same day everybody else is, December 19th, and have a place for that champion to go. And that's like going to have to be good enough.
What do you do with players who have opted out?
Well, so there's two options. Like Sewell, for instance, has signed with an agent. So under normal circumstances, I mean, I think that if you haven't signed with an agent, my guess is that you'll be able to come back. If you have signed with an agent under normal circumstances, that would eliminate the option to return. But I think that the NCAA needs to consider, you know, completely lifting the rule on that. Just chalk it off to a pandemic and say, you know what, even if you have signed with an agent, Penei Sewell, you can come back and play for Oregon. You know, the normal rules just do not apply because this is such a crazy situation. That would be the right thing to do for the athletes. I don't know if the NCAA will do it, though.
How does the Pac-12 say face here? Because part of this, I think they look dumb. They look like they're the last one in the pool. They're looking around. Even the Northwestern president, who's an academic, is saying, hey, there's more data now. We've made advancements. I've changed my mind. How does the Pac-12 save face?
Boy, I think it probably depends a little bit on your view. You know, I think that there are some folks that kind of get the fact that the Pac-12 is dealing with a different deck of cards than everybody else because of the state restrictions in California and Oregon and because of the wildfires, right? So those are two huge issues that nobody else has to deal with. And I think some fans, the more reasonable fans, probably get that and kind of consider that stuff. But certainly it's going to be bad. Those weeks when everybody else is playing and the Pac-12 is not, it's going to be bad. I think the only face you can save is you play as many as you can on the same calendar as everybody else. You know, play every Saturday in November, play those first few Saturdays in December, and even though it's only five or six games, you're at least there, right? You're better to be late to the party than to choose to not attend the party.
Yeah, I think that is a great point. You look now at, you know, moving forward, what are the big questions for this conference? Do you think Larry Scott and the Pac-12 CEO group are meeting via Zoom call now, meeting this week, meeting next week? How urgent is this for them?
Well, I think they have got a call on Friday, I believe. And it was pre-scheduled before the Big Ten announcement. And I believe the reason they have the call is because this afternoon the Division I Council is meeting and they are gonna, they're gonna set a new calendar for the basketball season. And so I believe the Pac-12 has scheduled that call with the presidents because they knew that the Division I Council was meeting today. I do not believe that there will be a vote by the presidents until the state restrictions have been lifted. There's no reason for them to vote to play football if they can't play football, right? They're like the last step. Everything else is the path is clear of everything else. And then the presidents vote to play. So I think that's probably a couple weeks away. But one thing I will be watching is to see if they basically, massage their approach so that the teams that are able to practice once those antigen tests arrive, you know, let's take the Arizona schools, right? They don't have these state restrictions. Well, once the antigen tests arrive, they should be able to start practicing. And so will the Pac-12 allow teams that can practice to start right away in early October, whereas, you know, California and Oregon schools may be a week or two behind. And that will certainly impact the start date of the season. But, you know, it's going to be hard, I think, to tell some schools when you've got the test and you've got the sign-off from the state, you can't move forward because of the California schools.
Wilner, the long-term effect on the conference, is this a hit to the brand, or does everybody sort of view, hey, the Pac-12 is not part of the playoff anyway in most years, so as long as they're playing some games in close proximity to the rest, that it's not a total disaster? What's the narrative?
not a total disaster sounds like a good narrative to me. Right? And you know, it also, the phrase I used the other day was decimation mitigation. You know, the pandemic kind of casts a little bit of a different framework on this whole thing, right? You'd think that the people, most of the people who are normally just bash a Pac-12, understand things are a little bit different this year. And the other issue is, what is really the audience that matters in that, you know, the reputation discussion? And you could argue that the audience that really matters there are the current high school, you know, sophomore, juniors, and seniors. And how are they going to view the Pac-12's handling of the situation compared to other conferences? Is it going to make them say, I don't want to be a part of the Pac-12, I'm signing with the SEC or the Big Ten? I'm not sure that it will. I think that the way the Pac-12 has handled things for a lot of parents in the western third of the country and their kids probably makes some sense, right? Because they see the wildfires. They see the California restrictions and Oregon restrictions. So I don't know that it's going to have a huge impact on, say, you know, the top 10 juniors on the West Coast.
Does it have an impact on their media rights discussion? Is that at all wrapped up in this?
I don't think it'll have an impact on the discussion that's going to start in a couple of years, right? They're going to get impacted on how much money they get from ESPN and Fox this season. There's no doubt. And it could be, you know, tens of millions per school here, depending on what happens. But I don't know. The only way I think it would impact is if, you know, the audience craters even further for them in the next few years because of this. But I also feel like that their standard audience will come back next fall. If next fall is normal, the audience will come back. And so then when they start their negotiations, they'll just chalk up what happened this year to the pandemic.
John Wilner, I appreciate you and your reporting. Great work. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, my friend. Be safe up there.
There he is in the Bay Area where Gavin Newsom he's tied himself into a pretzel. Pac-12 conference will seek an exception. You just know it. Just like the NFL teams did. Chargers, Rams, 49ers, all getting exceptions from the state government and local officials to have their games, have their practices. I know it's pros versus colleges, but it all comes down to testing. If you read the words from the governor of California, it was about testing. Testing, results, rapid results, all of that stuff is a game changer. I want you to leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. Each day on the show, we do the Culligan Water Cooler Report. I got a good one today. Meet me at
the water cooler. Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
So much to get through. I got to start with the Clippers here. What a meltdown. They looked so bad and got so outplayed in the second half of the last three games by the Denver Nuggets. They did not deserve to win a Game 7, and they didn't win a Game 7 as the Nuggets looked like the better team. Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, and Coach Mike Malone moving on to the Western Conference Finals. The Nuggets were fun. They had ball movement. They've got Jokic, who is just a sensational passer. Reminds a lot of people who saw Arvydas Sabonis of that style of center. You can run the ball through him, and he's terrific and fun to watch. Obviously, the Nuggets moving on, and the Clippers looking a lot like a team that gave up too much for Paul George. The Oklahoma City Thunder had to be smiling and snickering last night as it watched Paul George get excused from the playoffs. And if the Clippers don't win next year, that may go down as one of the worst trades in NBA history as you look at the amount of first-round draft picks that went to the Oklahoma City Thunder and, of course, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, flat performance from him in the second half and down the stretch. The Clippers just looked like they rolled over. Judah Newby, were you surprised by that? I expected more from Kawhi and company.
Yeah, especially in the second half. Denver starting to hit their threes. That seemed to be contagious. That happened in each of the three games that they won. And I was shocked. I was shocked that the Denver Nuggets won Game 7. After winning Game 5, winning Game 6, and I was like, all right, that's awesome. Clippers pushed to 7, but here comes LA. Kawhi won't let this happen. That was my default. Kawhi won't let this happen. And guess what? It happened on Kawhi and Paul George. I love watching Jokic and Murray, and I'll be rooting for him against LA.
Yeah, how could you not? Alabama Adriana, you were rooting for the Nuggets on social media last night.
Yeah, I just kept thinking, thank God the Blazers weren't facing this Nuggets team in their series. Was it last year?
Last year, yeah.
Thank God for that. The aftermath on Twitter was the best part, I think, with CJ and Dame going back and forth. It was hilarious.
Yeah, making fun of the Clippers, throwing shade, as you would say. But I would say they were making fun of the Clippers. And
gives the Blazers hope, I think, you know.
Does it? Yeah, I'm torn on that because now, I mean, I kind of felt like last year in the playoffs, the Blazers asserted themselves as a little better than Denver, and now I see Denver and the Clippers and the Lakers and Utah and Dallas, and I see the Western Conference, and I go, ooh, where do the Blazers fit? Miami looks good in the East, too. Man, do they look dangerous. Leave it here.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Baltimore.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.